This week's parasha is Parasha Shlach, and we're going to do something. We're going to start at the end of the parasha, share with you a thought on the end of the parasha, and then go back to the beginning. And the end of the parasha, which is on page 816, is the parasha of Tzitzis. And Pasuk Lamites, actually, let's start from the beginning, Lamed Zayin. Vayemar Hashem El Moshe, Leymar Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Daber Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Vamar Talayim, say to them, Va'asu Lahem Tzitzis, they should make for themselves Tzitzis, Al Kanfei V'gdehem B'deiraisam, on the corners of their garments for their generations, V'nasto Al Tzitzis, HaKonot B'sel Tcheles, they shall put on the tzitzis of the corner of your garment, a blue string. Tchelis is a special type of blue. It is something that it was something that was at one point lost. Some people wear tchelis now, some people don't. But the mitzvah deraisa of tchelis, the way the mitzvah is supposed to be, is that one of the strings is supposed to be dyed with this blue dye called the color of tchelis.
One string in each.
Yeah. V'haya lachem tzitzis, it shall be for you a tzitzis, u'reisa ma'isa, you shall see it, u'zachartim es kol mitzvah Hashem, and you shall remember all the commandments of Hashem, v'asisem ma'isam, and you shall do them. So the Torah tells us that tzitzis is there for us to see and to be reminded of all the mitzvahs of Hashem. How do tzitzis remind us of the mitzvahs of Hashem? Sharashi says, because the word tzitzis, in Gematria, the numerical value of the word tzitzis is 600. That's the value of tzitzis, it's 600. It's 600. You have 8 strings, and you have 5 knots. And therefore, that's how Rashi says, that's how we're reminded of 613 mitzvahs. Now I want to share with you the comment of the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar is also going to be discussing how is it that Tzitzis reminds us of all the mitzvahs. But when he begins his discussion, he seems to assume that when the Pasuk says, you shall, Re'isa Re'isa, you shall see it and remember all the mitzvahs of Hashem, that it's not going on the entire Tzitzis, but it's going on a blue string. The Torah says, you shall see it and remember all the mitzvahs. It's going on the psil tchel, it's going on the blue string of the tzitzis. And therefore the Kli Yakar says, we need to explain how is it that this one string of tchelas, how is it that it reminds us of all the mitzvahs of the Torah? So he begins, he says there are two approaches, and the first approach is as follows. He brings a medrash in Parshas Hazinu, where Hashem says to Moshe, Amar l'Kadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Amar l'hem l'Yisrael. Hashem said to Moshe, tell the Jewish people, Hisachu b'ashamayim shebarasi v'shameshchem. Look, gaze at the heaven, the sky, the heavens that I created to serve you. Shemashinu midasa, meshemo'o galgal chama min amayrev. Do any of the stars and constellations ever change their behavior? Does the sun ever rise in the west? But not only that, elosh tzameach lasis. But rather, it rejoices doing what it does. So the Medrash says that Hashem says to Moshe, tell the Jewish people, it's going in the Medrash, Hazino Hashemayim, listen heavens, and Moshe is to tell the Jewish people, look at the heavens, and look at the heavenly bodies. They never change, they always do what they're supposed to do. Not only that, they do it with joy. And the Kli Yakar doesn't bring down the Pasuk, but I believe the Pasuk is the Pasuk that we say every Shabbos morning. Describes the sun coming up like a chassin, like a gibar, going out to fight, to do battle. It goes out with that enthusiasm and excitement. And Hashem says to Jewish people, look at the heavenly bodies. Look how they always do, never change what they're supposed to do. They always do what they're supposed to do, and they do it with joy. And so too regarding the sea, that Hashem tells Moshe, tell the Jewish people, look at the oceans, look at the water. Quotes, it brings out a pasuk in Yirmiyah, is it me that you do not fear? That I have made this sand as a boundary to the water. Has the water ever changed its behavior? Now we do know that sometimes the water overflows, but typically, it's always crashing up against the sand. The sand acts typically, most of the time, as its boundary, and again, it's not like one day the water decides, well, I'm going over. It decides to do something different. I mean, there are times that it's different, but again, we know that typically it's doing what it normally does. But not only that, says the Medrash, actually, it really wants to. It's mitzayer. It really, really wants to flood. It really wants to go beyond the border of the sand, but it can't. Shem, as the pasuk says, by yiskashu or by yuchlu. By yiskashu, I think, believes that they roar and they're not able. Meaning the pasuk talks about how the waters of the ocean really always want to just keep going. They want to just keep going further, but they are stopped. So Moshe tells the Jewish people, look at the sea, contemplate the sea. The sea also does what it's supposed to do, day in, day out. And really, it doesn't want it. It would really like to break through and to flood the world, but Hashem doesn't let. So Moshe telling the Jewish people that they are supposed to look at the world, look at the heavens, look at the seas, and take a lesson from that. They both don't change. The sun and the other heavenly bodies do their daily routine with joy. The sea also does what it does daily, has its routine, and even wants to break it every time. Hashem doesn't let. Okay. So, what exactly is the point of the Medrash talking about how the seas really do want to override their borders, but Hashem doesn't let? And it's interesting just thinking about this idea about the water always wanting to flood further. We typically look at the ocean, and I mean, if it crashes against rocks, there you really see it's blocking it from moving forward. But it comes, the waves come and it comes down the shore and they kind of break up and just they break apart and just flow up on the shore and then they flow back. We kind of look at it as the inability of the water. But if you have a tsunami, which means there's some kind of something that pushes the water more, or there's some kind of terrible storm, and again, that adds some kind of energy to the water, that makes the water flood over. But what the Medrash says, and what the Pesukim say, and we say it every day in the morning, Reikaharet Alamayim, we thank every day Hashem for making the water, making the spreading the Aret Alamayim, spreading the earth on the water, which really tells us that the true nature, the spiritual nature of the water really would be that to keep going. It wants to keep going. And it's only because Hashem sets a limit to it every single day that it doesn't go forward. But the Medrash points out how the Shemesh, the sun, and all the heavenly bodies, they do what they do day in, day out with joy. The sea does what it does day in, day out, even though it really would like to, would like to not be limited the way that it is. Says the Kliyokar, Mikan Raya, so from here we see the way that the Medrash makes a distinction between the heavenly bodies and the water, that the heavenly bodies do their service of Hashem with joy, out of love. They're happy to do it. They're doing it out of love. The heavenly bodies represent serving Hashem with love. While the ocean, if the Medrash describes the ocean as being mitzayer, that means it really would like to change its ways. It would like to every day flood the world, but it stopped. It's restrained. Then really, that kind of following Hashem's decree is out of fear. It's that they want to do it, but they're restrained. They have to do it. So the heavenly bodies represent love of Hashem, while the seas represent fear of Hashem. Now, when it comes to Tchelas, the Kli Yakar cites a famous Gemara that says like this, Techeles Deim Eliyam. The color of the tchelas is similar to the color of the ocean. The yam d'emel rekia, the ocean is similar to the sky. Urekia d'emel kisei kaved, and the sky is similar to the kisei hakaved, to the heavenly throne of Hashem. Okay. Now the way he understands this is that if you say that tchelas is like the sea, and the sea is like the sky, and the sky is like the kisei hakaved, then that means that is tchelas like the sky? No, tchelas is like the ocean. That's what it's similar to. And the difference between tchelas and the sky, would it be so, they're both bluish, but you wouldn't make them so comparable. But you have the comparison, but the ocean and the sky, they're more comparable. And then you have the comparison of the sky to the Kisei HaKavod. Now, we don't see the Kisei HaKavod. The Kisei HaKavod, I don't think we could say is blue, but actually we do know that in Parshas Mishpatim, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, and it says that they saw Hashem, they saw, how's the pasuk go? Right. Pasuk says, Vayiru eis Elokei Yisrael, they saw the God of Israel, v'sachas raglavan, under his feet, kamasei libnas hasaper, the likeness of sapphire brickwork. Is sapphire blue? Okay, so the fact that we have this description of under his feet, they see Hashem, and under his feet is this brick that brick that looks like sapphire, right? Sapphire brickwork. So we see there is some kind of blue connection there. That's just to explain what it means, you know, that the Shemaim is like the Kisei HaKavod. But this kind of comparison that the Gemara makes is a comparison between the colors. And how each one is similar, one is similar to another, the other is similar to the other one, and it's these distinctions in the color that it progresses or it changes. Now, my understanding would be that if you're going from just looking from sky to tchelas, sky I think would be the lightest. Then comes the ocean blue, and then the tchelas. I mean, isn't usually the sky, isn't sky blue usually, but when you see a blue ocean?
I mean, it's reflecting.
Whatever it is, but at the end of the day, it has a blue color.
Yes.
And it's a deeper color than the sky. Is that correct or incorrect? Does it appear that way? I think
probably
it does appear that way.
Probably.
I mean, sky blue is always considered a lighter blue.
Right.
So again, in my understanding, the distinction of the colors, it starts deeper to lighter when going up, in ascending order, so to speak, in ascending order towards the Kisei HaKavod. But you've got these, you know, different colors, and the way that the Kli Yakar says that we have to look at what this Medrash means to say is, or this Gemara, is that this Gemara is what that Medrash before told us. And this saying of the Gemara is basically coming to reiterate everything that we mentioned before. Ma'in histaklus b'chutshal tcheles, coming to let us know, based on what we said before, what is the purpose of looking at the blue string? The sheyifka yedei zeh kol mitzvot Hashem. By looking at the blue string, you remember all the mitzvot of Hashem. V'lo yetzei min ha'amida afilu k'mal anima. And that is going to teach you not to deviate from Hashem's word, even like a hair breath. Meaning the blue string. The string is supposed to remind you of that don't deviate from Hashem, even a string word, even a hair breath. Now, what's the color of that string? It's tchelas. Elofish at tchelas daimaliyam. Tchelas is similar in color to the sea, but al yidei sheyistakel b'chutzeh, by now looking at that string, you'll now remember the sea that's similar in color. And now it'll be as if the sea is in front of your eyes always. And through that you should contemplate the actions, the behavior of the sea. Should a yaitse menamin yachliba kamalei nima, again, it doesn't change its routine at all, not even a little bit. Umimenu yire v'chenyase, and that is what you should follow. And this is, right, one second. Okay. So, when you say you like the sikli yachar, the string is meant to say, to teach you not to deviate from Hashem. Remember all the mitzvahs. And don't even deviate like a hair. The color blue is to remind us of the sea. So now when you're looking at that blue string, and you're being reminded not to deviate an iota, what is going to be reminding you of that? The fact that the color tcheles is similar to the color of the ocean. And now when you have that tzitzis in front of you, you're looking at that tzitzis in front of you, it's like you also have the ocean in front of you. And you have the ocean to contemplate this idea of not deviating even a hairbreadth. Not deviating at all, just like the sea doesn't deviate. And he says that's the word tzitzis. The word tzitzis comes from the word to look. The point is that you want to have this, you want to be always looking at this, you always want to be remembering. It always has a message. And it has that message of following all the mitzvahs of Hashem, because by the fact that it is similar to the ocean, the point is, don't deviate a bit, like a stream, don't even deviate a hairbreadth, just like the ocean doesn't deviate. That itself is a reminder for all the mitzvahs. Just like the ocean has its boundary, Hashem says, you go up to the ocean, this is how far you go, you don't go any further, so to Hashem says the same thing to us. This is what you may do, this is where you may go, this is where you may not go, and you don't deviate from that, even a hairbreadth. Continues the Kli Yachar, okay. So it's good, now I have a reminder of the ocean constantly in front of me. But if all I have is the ocean to be a reminder, the ocean only reminds me of serving Hashem out of yira, out of fear. Okay? But we know that fear is not the ultimate. The ultimate is love of Hashem. And therefore, says the Kli Yachar, the next step is that now that you have the ocean in front of you, so to speak, and you're thinking of the ocean now reminds you of what? Reminds you of the Shemayim. Reminds you of the heaven. And when you're reminded of the heaven, the same, and being reminded of the heaven, the same idea. The heavenly bodies do not deviate an iota from what they're supposed to do. But those heavenly bodies, what do they do it out of? They do it out of joy. They do it with joy. They do it out of love of Hashem. They do it out of love of Hashem. And therefore, the point is that now you also want to have the image of the sky in front of you always, so that again, you're reminded never to deviate like the heavenly bodies, but never to deviate with love, with joy. That's the next level that you're supposed to go to. That's what it means when it says that the yam is similar, the ocean is similar to the rakia, to the sky. So that now, meaning go from the level of yira, of fear, and go up to the next level of love of Hashem. Okay? Now, the final stage is that the sky reminds you of the kisei hakavod, of the throne of Hashem. So the Kli Yachar says the last stage of this whole this reminder of Tchelos is like the ocean, the ocean is like the sky, and now up to the sky is like the Kisei HaKavod. Okay. That last stage of remembering the Kisei HaKavod is to teach you the following. Okay, you told me that I start off with a level of Yira and I go to a level of Ahava. Right? I start off, I have first a level of serving Hashem out of fear, and I go up to the level of serving Hashem out of love. What is the difference? What's the advantage of serving Hashem out of love more than out of fear? What's the advantage of it? And the answer to that is, says the Kli Yachar, how the Shemayim, which again represents Ahava, is similar to the Kisei HaKavod. It's similar to the throne of Hashem. Ahava is going to take you to a higher level called Dveikus. Dveikus means have to cling to Hashem, to be attached to Hashem. When you love someone, you always want to be with it. So when you hit, when you reach the level of loving Hashem, now loving Hashem means I always want to have that connection. And when you reach that level of love of Hashem, when you have a fear of something, right, you're not necessarily looking to always be connected with it. You're kind of, you know, making sure that you don't mess things up. Or actually you kind of, if it's a question of awe, then you're kind of distancing yourself. But love is something that pushes you to try to be together, to be on a consistent, with a constant connection. And that's what it means that the Shamayim is similar to the Kisei HaKavod. When you hit the level of Shamayim, when you hit the level of the heavenly bodies, which is serving Hashem out of love, that will now get you to the highest level, which is the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of Hashem, the place from which all neshamas emanate from, says the Kli Yakar. Now you want to be able to get, you want to have that connection. You want to be able to have a constant connection with the Kisei HaKavod, a constant connection from where your neshama emanates from. Ahava, love of Hashem, will bring you to that highest level. And that highest level is represented in Kisei HaKavod, where all neshamas come from. So that is the whole, that's this level of ascension that we have. You've got, so to put it all together, the Kli Yakar says, the question was, how does Tcheles remind us of all the mitzvahs? The answer is, Tcheles is to remind us this lesson of not to deviate an iota from serving Hashem. And that, of course, reminds us of all the mitzvahs of Hashem. The way that it does it is because the Tcheles, the blue string, the blue represents, it reminds us of the water, right? Water is what reminds us to serve Hashem out of fear. The water is similar to the heavens. The heavens represent love of Hashem, that we have to go to a higher level of love of Hashem. And then once we're at that level of love of Hashem, now we say, the heavens, the sky, is similar to the throne of Hashem. When we reach the level of Ahava, that we love Hashem, that will now push us, that will now drive us to have that constant connection. Just like when you love someone, you always want to be with them. So too, when you love Hashem, you'll always want to be connected with Hashem, and you'll reach that level of dveikus, of attachment to Hashem, where you're in this constant connection and closeness with Hashem. And it's that string. The string telling you, don't deviate an iota. Don't even deviate a hairbreadth. How are you going to remember not to do that? Through the colors of the Tcheles, the color of the sea, the color of the sky, and eventually getting to the reminder of the Kisei HaKavod, of reaching the level of Dveikus, of clinging to Hashem always. So that's the first approach of the Kli Yakar. The second approach, he says, is like this. And this is maybe a little bit on a kind of a little bit more esoteric level, if that wasn't esoteric for you enough before. But this question, he says like this. The mitzvahs that we fulfill are compared to a garment. They're a garment for the neshama. But we know there's a big difference between mitzvahs that we see them as a garment, as a cloak, as a garment for the neshama, and our regular clothing. Kistan beger arug dafka menachutin harvei. Any garment you wear has to be made of many threads. Many threads. Ki chut echad ein bo kedei miskafes. One thread isn't going to do much for you. Avol malbush haneshama ein ekein. But this cloak, this garment of the neshama, which are mitzvahs, ein ekein is different. Ela afivu b'chut echad yesh bo kedei lachaseisa. Even one thread, even one mitzvah, has the ability to cover the neshama, to protect the neshama. Kedidamer Shabbi Yechanan, libli chayk, libli shloi shamar, apilu chak echad, or mishamar apilu chak echad, nitzom yehenim. Gemara Sanhedrin says that if you didn't keep anything, then after 20 years, you're in trouble. But if you keep one mitzvah, for doing one mitzvah, that has the potential to save you from Gehenim. Now, can't tell you all the rules of Gehenim, right? Don't know exactly what this means, you know, but this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that there's the potential that one mitzvah alone can protect you from Gehenna. That's what it means, that the mitzvah is a garment. The same way garments protect our bodies, the mitzvah protects the neshama. But for our garment to protect our bodies, it has to be made of many threads. While the garment of the neshama can be just one thread, one mitzvah. One mitzvah has the power to protect the neshama from Gehenna. The time of Shaldavar, what's the explanation behind this? The Fisha Briskusa Shemitzvah Gereris Mitzvah. There is a covenant, a promise made, that we say Mitzvah Gereris Mitzvah. That means one mitzvah draws another. The Imkein Miyad Kesha'atarach Mitzvah Achas, therefore, immediately upon performing one mitzvah, how you call our mitzvahs for Kaychel Asais, you now receive the potential to fulfill all the mitzvahs. Even though they haven't gone from potential to actual, something that's potentially there, it's like you've done it. This is the deeper message of the blue string. Hamaskol mitzvahs Hashem, that reminds us of all the commandments of Hashem. Ki al yodai nasad beget shalom l'neshama. Because through it, you now have a complete garment for the neshama. Okay. Now. So he says like this, the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says that I'm going to use the word somehow, because he's trying to say that the blue string of tzitzis is meant to bring out this message of the one string garment, the one mitzvah that protects the neshama. Now, I don't know if he means specifically tchelis. You know, does he specifically mean tchelis? Is he working with the explanation he said before, that the tchelis reminds us of the kisei hakavod? It's not clear to me. But what he's trying to say here is that the one string of tchelis, the one string of blue, is meant to bring out this idea that our garment for our neshama can be just all you need is one string, all you need is one mitzvah. I'm just thinking right now again, maybe what he means is that he is working with that Gemara Menachos that says that the tchelis reminds us of the sea of the sky of the kisei hakavod. Because again, it's trying to make a connection to the neshama. We want the string to make a connection to the neshama, which we do that through the tchelis, the blue string. And the one string is trying to teach us this idea. It's trying to teach us this idea that you want that the cloak for the neshama, the protection of the neshama, one string, one mitzvah. One mitzvah has the potential to do that. And he says the reason it has the potential to do that is because mitzvah gereris mitzvah, one mitzvah brings on another mitzvah. You do one mitzvah, it gives you the potential to do all mitzvahs, and even if you didn't do it yet, it's as if you've done them. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means. I mean, you didn't do it yet, so what does it mean as if you did it? But what I think he means is that the concept of mitzvah gereris mitzvah, that one mitzvah brings on another mitzvah, is really a very powerful concept. We may not feel it, but in essence, and the Nefesh HaChaim says this, that the idea of mitzvah gereris mitzvah is that when you do a mitzvah, you're surrounded by a light of kedusha. You're surrounded by an energy of kedusha, and when you now have that energy of kedusha surrounding you, that now conditions you. That now makes you fit to do another mitzvah, and it brings on another mitzvah. There's something really happening here. This one mitzvah is creating a very strong energy around you that makes you worthy of more mitzvahs and brings on more mitzvahs. So, you know, if you have that energy, we can actually say, I mean, it's not the same thing as actually doing the mitzvah, but we could say with the one mitzvah that you did, it now brings about such an energy around you to do more mitzvahs.
Potential.
You've got that potential is a very strong potential. You've got something here with that. It's not just theoretical. You've got something here. The energy to do that is so strong that we could actually consider the performance of one mitzvah that creates the potential for other mitzvahs, like I have the mitzvahs already, because of that strong energy that's created from it. So that the Kli Yakar is saying that the second approach of that the psil tchelis, the string of tchelis, that it becomes a reminder of all the mitzvahs, is because that one psil tchelis, that one thread of tchelis, is actually coming to remind us of this idea of the one mitzvah, the one thread, the one mitzvah that can be a cloak, a protection for the neshama, because it has the potential, it creates the potential for doing all the mitzvahs. So when you put on tzitzis and you look at the tchelis and you're reminded of this idea, That's how you remember all the mitzvahs. You're remembering all the mitzvahs because you're remembering this concept of the one string, that's the whole garment is one string for the neshama. Because the one mitzvah has the power to go ahead and to give us the potential for all the mitzvahs. And for the potential for all those mitzvahs, like we have those mitzvahs, that's why the neshama is protected with one mitzvah, and that gives us the reminder for all the mitzvahs. So that's the Kliyakar's explanation, the two explanations of how is it that when the Torah says, you'll see it. You'll see the blue string. You'll remember all the mitzvahs. These are the two approaches that he has. Okay. Now, we will go back to the beginning of the parasha. And I will share with you a number of comments from the Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya. His explanation to some of the points at the beginning of the parasha. So the beginning of the parasha, we know, is where Moshe sends out the spies. This is page 798, Perakid Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Vayidabra Hashem El Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Shlach Lecha Anashim, send for yourself, fully translated people, and they'll spy out the land of Canaan. The Rabbeinu Bachya has an introduction, like he has to every parasha. And the introduction starts with a pasuk in Mishlei. Sus muchan liyem alchama, the horse is prepared for the day of war, v'Hashem ha'teshuah, and to Hashem is the salvation. What that means is something that we say every morning in davening, which is that every time and every endeavor that you take on, sheyase kol davar sheyitzarech la'aseis, u'bederech ha'teva, komash v'koichai. You have to first do, when you have to take, whenever you start any kind of endeavor, you have to do whatever is naturally in your capability of doing towards that thing. And then after that, you give over the rest to Hashem. A miracle only takes place when there is a lack of nature, the natural means. A person is created to follow the level of Teva, of nature. We're born into nature. We're supposed to live with the nature. And we don't rely on miracles. So therefore, the first thing is to do all the actions and preparations that are necessary to reach what you want. Somebody has to go to war. When you go to war, you gotta put together an army. Because if you don't put together an army and you rely on a miracle, you must be at Eivav. You will be given over to your enemies. There's somebody ill. So what do? You gotta take care of him. You gotta make sure he eats what he eats is proper. Make sure to save him from the things that hurt him and to give him the medications he needs. And then after you've done everything that you can do, therefore now at this point, what do you put your trust in? Your trust is then put in Hashem Yisalah. After you've done everything you're supposed to do, your trust is in Hashem, not in all the things that you did. You could be the best prepared army and lose the war. And then sometimes you could be stuck without anything and still survive and still be victorious. When it comes to the sick person, if a sick person takes care of himself 100% what they're supposed to do, they still don't make it. You have other patients that don't do anything and they still survive. Like the people they sometimes have, we're up 105, that every day they eat fried foods and smoke and drink coffee. Okay? The true salvation doesn't lie in the warfare or in the medications. Rak Hashem Yisala, but it is in Hashem. Like we say every day in davening. We say, Hashem doesn't want the power of the horse. Does Hashem want the thighs, the strength of the man? Rabbi Shimon Shiritzer, Rabbi Hashem is Tireyav, Hashem wants those who fear him, Lamiachlim Machase, those who hope to his kindness. So the point being made here is that, again, a person has to do whatever they can naturally do. After they've done all the natural preparations that they can, then the trust does not go into those preparations, but rather in Hashem. Now, and he says, okay, v'lachach, and therefore, at this point, titzava ha'tarei li'Yisrael, nishtaga ba'chana tsa'ela, she'yetzu chalutze ba'leisen l'molcham ha'loiveyen, v'shisimu oyu v'shashachim ha'yagam b'rei ha'veyen. Says the Ben Abachaya, that is what's happening here. What's happening here is that Hashem tells Moshe, you're about to fight a war. You fight a war, you have to use the natural means of fighting a war. And therefore, what are you going to do? You're going to send out spies. Even he says, even though Bnei Yisrael didn't need any of this, because their victory doesn't follow the natural means, really what the difference is, their merits, their worthiness, or their unworthiness. If they are meritorious, if they are righteous, then a few can overcome many. And if they are liable, if they're not worthy, they've sinned, then you could have a few of the enemy chasing over many thousands of them, which we have in Parshas Bechukotai. Right? In the Brachas and the Kalas, when Hashem is Jewish people, Hashem promises a few of you can run after thousands, and the other way around. A few of them can run after many of you. So really, he says, we have Hashem telling the Jewish people to engage in war in a natural means. They really don't need it, because it really depends on their chisim, their merits, or on their worthiness or unworthiness. Still, Hashem says to them, you have to engage in the natural means of how you engage in war. And he says, the first example of this is when Hashem told Noach to make a teva, to make an ark. What do you need an ark for? Right? Noach and his family, they should be able to walk on top of the water, and everything should be fine. What do you need an ark for? But the answer is, Hashem didn't need to save Noach, didn't need to make an ark with its dimensions made out of this and this wood. But rather, again, the Torah always tells us that we have to engage in the natural means of how things are done. And then after whatever efforts we put in, after all that, at the end of the day, you have to engage in all the natural engagements and means of putting in our efforts. But after you do that, what is your trust in? Not in those efforts, but in Hashem. And he's saying that is what happened here. By Shlach Lecha Hashem. So he continues to Ben Abachaya. The Hashem says to Moshe, send for yourselves people. Now we know in Parshas Devarim, when Moshe repeats the Torah of the Meraglim, Moshe adds how the Jewish people first approached Moshe about sending out spies. And therefore, this pasuk, Shlach Lecha Anashim, Hashem is to Moshe, send out men, says the Brei Bechaya, that's a response to the Jewish people's request. They requested spies, and therefore, the response was, Shlach Lecha Anashim, send out the people. Which again, he reiterates. Right? He says, you know, they wanted the spies. Now, so good. Hashem says, send out spies. That's the way you fight a war. First, you send out spies to scout out how it's the way to attack, and that's what they were doing. Now, the next thing he does is he brings down Rashi. Rashi, we know here, on Shlach Lecha Anashim, the word lacha, send for yourself, people. Rashi says, Shlach lecha ledaitcha. Send them according to the way you see it. Ani ani mitzavalach. Imtiris v'shlach. I'm not telling you to do it. If you want to do it, you can send them. Okay? Fi shavro Yisrael v'amru neshulchan Hashem lefaneinu. The Jewish people asked that, let's send out spies. Hashem, Moshe turns to the Shechinat Hashem, and Hashem says, Ani amartu lachem shehi toiva. I told them it's a good land. They don't really need spies. But if you feel there should be spies, send them. So the Rebbe Chaya brings down Rashi, and, you know, he's bothered, right? If we just said that, you know, that there's nothing wrong with what they're doing, what the reaction, what they're doing is the typical efforts that are done in engaging in war. So what does Rashi mean that Hashem says to Moshe, you know, I didn't tell him to do it, you know, if you see them asking, you feel you should do it, do it. So, is it right thing to do? It's the wrong thing to do. So the way that the Rabbeinu Bechaya explains Rashi, and I think, again, he wants to learn Rashi like he does, that it's all still, there's nothing wrong with it. It's all part of the hishtadlus that you're supposed to do, and that is that we find certain places in the Torah that a mitzvah comes about when the Jewish people request. For instance, a king. There's a mitzvah to have a king. Mitzvah to have a king is only when the Jewish people ask for one, not before. So too over here. To go ahead and engage in the spies became the thing to do once the Jewish people asked. But what he seems to be saying is, though, that if they wouldn't have asked, they wouldn't have been spies. But didn't he say before that you have to engage in war following the normal manner of things? So the way I understand it is going back to when he brought the Teva, the Ark of Noach. So the Rabban points this out in Parashas Noach. Okay. Hashem tells Noach, you should build an ark made of this wood with these dimensions, and this is how you build the ark. Okay? Can an ark with those dimensions hold every animal in the world? Even, don't forget, it's Noach and his family, it's seven pairs of kosher animals, and then it's a pair of non-kosher animals, and it's every animal in the world. Do you think that teva, which I think basically equals maybe a couple of football fields, and I'm not remember exactly how it comes out. Do you think those dimensions could actually carry everything? Says the Rambam, no, they can't. At the same time, though, you can't do nothing. There's always some level of natural effort that has to go in. Again, by Noach, did that effort make sense that it was going to work? No, it was still a miracle. Still, there's an idea of minimizing the miracle and therefore doing something following a natural means. Naturally, you want to survive a flood, you got to build a ship. You have a lot of people, it's got to be big. And for Noach, and for the situation by Noach, that was enough. That was enough to fulfill this concept that we have to first put in our natural, normal endeavors. So my understanding is, if the Jewish people wanted to ask for the spies, does that mean they would have walked into Eretz Canaan and waved goodbye and everybody would have ran away? No. They would have had a war. But Hashem said, you don't really need spies. I told you that the land is good. You really don't need spies. And you don't even really need the spies for your war purposes. You really don't need it. For what you have to, for the amount of how you have to engage in natural means, you don't need that. Once you ask for it, then it became part. But it wasn't wrong. It wasn't wrong. It now falls under the natural efforts that they have to do. But would they have not asked for the spies, they wouldn't have needed that as part of their efforts. So there's got to always be efforts. How much efforts you're going to have, that may depend. But there always has to be some effort. And even if they should have not asked for the spies, and the spies shouldn't be part of the effort, once it is part of the effort, Hashem says to Moshe, Shlach lecha send, then it doesn't mean it's wrong. It means now it's part of the effort, because it is part of the effort. But what you now, now the Jewish people now are going to be doing their natural efforts by asking for the spies now became part of that. It doesn't say anything about that. Basically, I mean, again, it was a challenge to them, that's for sure. But basically, you know, the idea of sending out the spies, the Rebbeinu Bechai is learning, and my understanding is he's trying to include Rashi in that. Maybe when we look at Rashi, we're going to learn Rashi that way, but the way he's trying to explain, learn Rashi is that Rashi is following that also. It's just that you ask for it, that's what it becomes now. That now becomes part of the mitzvah. You went and asked for it, it wouldn't have been part of it. You went and asked for it, it wouldn't have been part of your natural, part of your natural efforts, or your efforts in the natural, and now that you asked for it, now it did become. Now, the Rebbeinu Bechaya then continues, and he brings down an interesting medrash. Brings down a medrash says like this: the Ragim Shashalach Moshe Ksilim Hayu. The spies that Moshe sent were fools. The Ragim Shashalach Yehoshua. The spies that Yehoshua sent later on, 40 years later, Tzadikim Hayu. They were righteous. And what does he do? He goes through the story in Sefer Yehoshua when Yehoshua sends the spies. So it says the spies, what happened? Yishlach Yeshua ben Nun min Ashitim, Shnei Manashim Raglim, Chayre Shleimar. Yeshua ben Nun sent from Ashitim two men as spies, Chayresh, which typically means quietly. Chayresh, the Medrash says, actually comes to, is meant to be related to the word Cheres, which means pottery. That means when he sent the two spies to go into the land, so all of a sudden these two guys show up, right? So, you know, when you're a spy, you don't just, you know, walk in and, you know, start looking around. You have to disguise yourself as something. So therefore, these spies were pottery salesmen. And they were going around to Yerichai saying, you know, pots for sale, pots for sale. And that was the way how they were supposed to disguise themselves and at the same time be looking around. Okay, now, then we know, then they went to Rachav's house, and that's where they stayed. Why? We know that the king of Yerichai got wind that there's these two guys around, and they really figured that they were spies for the Jewish people. And we know that they hid in Rachav's house, and the officers, the soldiers of the Melech Yerichai came, she was able to hide them and save them. But the king of Yerichai caught on what was going on and he went looking for them. Okay, so it says that she, that Rachav, wanted to hide them. Okay, but the Pasuk talks about, and he brings down, the woman took the two men, and she hid. Literally translated means she hid, it means it would read as, and she hid him. But it shouldn't be, and she hid him, or she hid each one. It should be, but it's benay, she hid them. So what happened? Says the Medrash. She wanted to hide them. So who are the two spies that Yeshua sent? Kalev and Pinchas. Pinchas said to her, I'm a Kayan. A Kayan is like a Malach, like an angel. An angel you don't see. Don't worry about me. I can make myself invisible. You don't have to bother hiding me. I can hide myself. Therefore, she took the two men. She only had to hide one who was Kalev. The other she didn't have to hide because he hid himself, made himself disappear. Okay. So now, but Lelametcha says the So this is how the Medrash shows that the spies that Yeshua sent, they were tzaddikim, they were righteous. The spies that Moshe sent, they were fools. Why? Umaytzidiba huksil, a pasuk in Mishlei. Umaytzidiba, you spread bad tidings, you spread bad information, evil information, huksil, that person's a fool. Then the Rabbi Bachya points out that even though the Mishnah calls them fools, they didn't start off as fools. Send men. Anasha means prestigious people. They were righteous people when they started, but they soured. Okay, so he quotes this medrash, an interesting medrash. The spies of Moshe were fools. The spies of Rachav were righteous. And it tells us the story about Pinchas, how he made himself invisible. That is how the medrash wants to show the righteousness of those spies, but these spies were fools. what's the point here? What's the point here? What exactly is the Medrash, and when it's contrasting the two, and it talks about how the spies of Yeshua were righteous because we see that Pinchas was able to hide himself, and these were fools because at the end they spoke Lashon Hara. What's the point here? What is the point of this all? So, this is my suggestion, totally my suggestion, and that is like this. You know, the word ksil means a fool. And if the word ksil in this context means a fool, it means that we're looking at these spies as fools because you saw the miracles of Hashem and you don't believe anymore. And you lost your belief. You gave up on everything after all the miracles that you saw. That's foolish. The Medrash is trying to say here that Kalev and Pinchas actually found themselves in a similar situation as the spies. The spies were all righteous when they went. Then they walk into Eretz Yisrael, and they looked around them, and they freaked out, and they lost their emuna, because they looked at what was happening in front of them. There's no way we can do this. Okay. Perhaps Kalev and Pinchas found themselves in the same spot. The king got hold of them. The king knew where they were. Right? They were in trouble. They were in big trouble. Yes, Rachel wanted to hide them. But perhaps she really couldn't hide both. She really couldn't hide both. Someone was going to get caught. And at that point, Kalev and Pinchas are also now in a situation of, what are they to do? It's beyond their capability of doing anything. But what happens? Pinchas makes himself invisible. Now you'll say, well, if I could make myself invisible, I wouldn't be too worried either. But perhaps if Pinchas would have at some level his belief and trust in Hashem would have start wavering when he found himself in that trouble, perhaps he wouldn't be able to do that anymore. Perhaps he wouldn't be on that level that he can make himself like an angel of Hashem to disappear. So the fact that Pinchas was able to do this, and the fact that he was able to do this and Kalev to be saved, that's a proof that although Kalev and Pinchas found themselves in big trouble right now, and they could have lost their belief in Hashem just like their colleagues did 38 years before, they didn't. And that's how they were able to be saved. And that's what the Medrash means to say. The spies of Pinchas of Yeshua were righteous. How do we know they were righteous? How do we know that they never ever wavered in their trust in Hashem? Because they were able to be saved. They were miraculously saved, which could only be possible if they kept their full trust in Hashem. And they really were in the same spot as the Meraglim. They look around them and they say to themselves, there's no way we can do this. There's no way we can survive this. They kept their trust in Hashem, and therefore they survived. The other ones lost their trust in Hashem foolishly, and therefore they're called fools. So perhaps what this Medrash that the Ben Vachai is trying to bring down is, it's trying to really bring out the contrast between the two. How both sets of spies were faced with the same kind of challenge, but the first spies messed up, they didn't meet the challenge, and the second spies did meet the challenge. How do you know they met the challenge? And meaning, when they found themselves stuck and not able to do anything, they didn't lose their trust in Hashem. How do we know they remained with their trust in Hashem? How do we see that they remained unfazed by what was happening? By the mere fact that Pinchas could pull off this miracle, which now saved them. It had to be they were both on the high level of trust in Hashem for that to happen for them. Perhaps that's the meaning behind this message.
What about Caleb and Joshua and the first?